Today is the 26th of February 2015 and I'm here to interview Carola Regent. Good afternoon, Carola. Could I begin by asking you when you were born and where were you born?
I was born in Düsseldorf on the 5th of December 1925.
And what was your name at birth?
Well, my surname was Zirndorfer.
You came from a Jewish family. Can you tell us a bit about your family before you came to the UK, before everything changed?
Well, it wasn't a strict Jewish family at all. My father was a publisher and had many friends, Christian friends and so on. We weren't strict, we weren't kosher. Very happy childhood we had.
And what sort of things did you do at the weekends? What were your interests at the time?
Well, when I was young like that, when my father used to take us for lovely walks up on the hills every Sunday while Mummy cooked the dinner and played. In those days, we still played on the street a game called Völkerball. You know, a whole crowd of us used to, there were very few cars. And skipping and on the street we used to mark, what do you call it,
hopscotch.
Yes, hopscotch and skipping and roller skating and later ice skating. And
were your friends Jewish and Christian?
Oh, well, I think they were all Christian around us, you know.
And did you have any brothers or sisters?
Yes, a younger sister, Lottie, who's about 3.5 years younger.
And tell us a little about your schooling. You went to school in Düsseldorf?
No, in the first 4 years I went to where we lived, in Gerresheim, which is a suburb of Düsseldorf. I had a lovely time. Awfully nice teacher. I think there were 50 of us in the class, you see.
50? My goodness.
I know, but somehow that's how, mm-hmm. You know, we were all divided up into sections, you know, inside. Mm-hmm. And a very, very, very nice teacher who was, even when the Nazis came and things were difficult, she sort of stuck by us and sort of protected us, you know, in the mornings when everybody had to stand up in class and say Heil Hitler. She said, you needn't do it, and you know, very, very protective of me.
Were you the only Jewish girl in the class?
I don't remember. I think probably yes.
And what happened at the end of your primary education? Could you join the rest and go on to the secondary school?
Well, that's the thing I couldn't do. I had to go to the Jewish school.
And was that close to where you lived, or did you have to travel?
No, it wasn't. We lived in a suburb, and I had to go by a tram to that school.
Did you find that very disturbing at the time, or were you quite happy to move on to the Jewish school?
Well, you see, I finished my 4 years, mm-hmm. So I had to have a change anyway, so, no, you know, it wasn't a big deal.
Well, you had to change trams in the middle of Düsseldorf.
Pardon?
You do have to change trams in the middle of the
city.
Ah,
yes, that was quite a thing, because I was still fairly young and I had to go and change trams to get to the Jewish school.
So you would have been about 8 when the Nazis came to power. Were you aware, as young as that, of life
Wait
changing for you?
When did they come to power? In
33.
How old was I? I'm 33, 25.
Eight.
Eight, yes.
Do you
remember things changing at that point?
Oh, yes, indeed.
What do you remember?
Well, I remember that the SA is used to, on a Sunday morning, march through the street, and people always stood and watched and so on, and, you know, Heil Hitler and all that. And the young people, you know, of my own age, they joined and singing, and, you know, it was all very jolly, but, I mean, for them. So I usually, we kept out of the way when they marched through. I don't remember a great deal of unpleasantness, except, yes, at a certain time, they never did anything specific, but I remember one occasion when I was coming back from a walk or something, and I wanted to go into our house, and all the young boys and girls or something, the ones who fell under the spell of Nazism, were sitting on the steps leading to our front door, and I didn't really know what to do. But I stood just opposite on the pavement, didn't do anything for a while, and then another person who lived in the house upstairs was going in, so I quickly joined him and went in through the door. And they never did anything, but there was always this threat, you know, and a feeling of no longer being part of things.
And how did your parents react?
To what?
To the changing situation.
Well, I mean, my father was very good. He used to travel to Düsseldorf and visit people and see how they were and so on. And that was a fortunate thing. And my mother and my sister and me, we'd gone for a walk. And we were coming back, and we saw the cars outside the Nautica. And so we didn't go. We went back to some friends and waited till they had gone, which was a good thing. My father was away visiting, helping people. So I don't know what they'd come for, whether to arrest us or what. Anyway, they didn't come back. So that was...
Did the children play with you as they always had done?
What?
Did the children play with you as they always had done?
No, because they came under the influence of some young people who are very strong Nazis. My special friend, she sometimes, when the coast was clear, I used to come, but my father said she shouldn't, because for her sake.
So did you find a lot of the time you were playing with your sister?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, we had good games. Yes, we had lots of games we played. Yes, I played with my sister. And also, when I went to the Jewish school, you see, I made friends, and then we had mm-hmm. contact with other.
And did your father, was he able to keep his job? What happened to him and his business?
No, he they were very, very good and loyal, but he left, because it would have endangered them too if he'd gone on.
His staff? Endangered his staff, the people who worked for him?
The firm he worked for, yes. So, but he did sort of still do work, but not with them, you see.
This was a sympathiser, wasn't it? Have you told me before that someone found him work of a different sort, much less interesting than he had done?
Yes.
And so this is how he managed to survive. But they had to give up, you told me that they had to give up jewellery and watches and all sorts of things like that.
Oh, God, yes. Yes, there came an edict that the Jews had to give up all their jewellery and take it along. But we'd given some of the very nicest family to some friends, Christian friends, and the girls, they travelled to England and France and so on. So some of the things were taken out.
That's
interesting. Mm. And what happened at the time of Kristallnacht in 1938? Was your family affected then?
Yes.
What happened?
Oh, well, it was terrible. I'll read you a few lines. I'd written it down here.
This is from your book called The Ninth of November.
Yes. It must have been 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning when suddenly I was ripped out of my sleep by the sound of smashing crockery in glass. On and on it went. At first I thought I must be dreaming still. But now it sounded as though the whole china cupboard had been hurled down with everything in it exploding. It was coming from the kitchen. I don't know what I thought. Burglar? Earthquake? Lottie? She too was awake, and both of us were out of our beds, out of our room, flying into our parents' room a few doors along the passage. But it was no longer a haven. My father, in his nightshirt, stood speechless beside the bed. He was on his way to fetch us. My mother was sitting up, her black hair streaming over her shoulders, her eyes wild with fear. She gathered us into the bed with calming sounds. Seconds later, there burst into our room a horde of violent monsters, their faces contorted into raving mouths of hatred, some red, some pale, all screaming and shouting, eyes rolling, teeth bared, wild hands flailing, jackboots kicking. They were wielding axes, sledgehammers, stones and knives. They rushed about the room, smashing, throwing, trampling. It seemed to me that there were hundreds of them bursting through the door, though I believe there were only about a dozen. A chair hurled into the wardrobe mirror, glass flying everywhere. Crouching in bed, I saw a monster with a knife blade shining, screaming towards a painting on Daddy's side of the bed. It was a valuable painting, a very beautiful landscape, in which my father took great joy. Around me there was tumult, noise, confusion, but suddenly all my attention became fixed. My whole being became focused on my father's pathetic figure in his nightshirt, moving towards the painting as if to shield it. "Not that, not that," I heard him plead. And then, just as in a nightmare in which everything is happening in slow motion, and in which one is paralyzed and helpless at the crucial moment, I saw one Nazi pick up a large marble slab from the smashed dressing tabletop. He raised it high above his head. In that split second, as he threw it across the room with all his might at my gesticulating father, I had a momentary vision of him being smashed to the ground. But my father had ducked instinctively and retreated to the bedside, watching, now speechless, as another Nazi dug his knife blade deep into the canvas, slashing and hacking it as though he wanted to fell the staunchly painted summer oak. Well, now fear became a living thing, fear for the life and safety of my parents, who represented my own safety. It was like drowning. I sat numbed and in shock, watching without sound as axes flew into the screaming wood of chests and wardrobes. The one who had hurled the marble slab hardly stayed to watch the result, but frothing at the mouth, he found new sport in splintering doors, window frames, and driving his axe into the wall and floorboards.
That must have been so traumatic an experience for you.
Yeah.
And that, and what happened after?
Well,
when
there was another little bit which was rather touching. And, you know, we were all paralysed. But then there came to the side of our bed a small man, outwardly the same, brown shirt, leather belt, jack boots. But he had a face, not a distorted mask. And he had human eyes and that saw our fear. He bent low and whispered, "Children, don't look. Don't look, children. Hide your eyes. I'm sorry. I had to do it." And somehow he drew the fanatic horde of raving animals from our room and drew them away, smashing and slashing in other rooms. Quite suddenly, our room was empty and we were all still alive. No one moved, the sounds continued a while, and then there was silence, though my mind still heard the noise. But there was silence, complete and sudden, with only the broken furniture groaning and settling into place. We listened to the silence for a long time, not daring to breathe, expecting them to return any minute to kill us, but they did not return.
After that, did your parents decide that they had to leave or you had to leave?
Well, they didn't, you see. Yes, they decided then that my uncle in America, who'd been pleading for them to come and send us, decided that we had to go, my sister and I. And so arrangements were where my mother started shopping for clothes that would last us for years to come. And we were sent to... I had a relations, an aunt, uncle and cousin in London. They were living there already. And so arrangements were made for us to go there.
But this was the Kinder transport.
Were you part of the Kinder transport?
Yes, yes. But we went by the Kinder transport.
The last train that came out from the Rhineland?
The last train that stopped at Düsseldorf, yes.
I see. So you were very lucky to escape.
Very lucky indeed, yes.
And your parents, I assume, could not get visas to escape.
Oh, that was a complicated affair. My father had tried all sorts of things. But we lived opposite the Gauleiter, that means one of the leaders of the Nazi group. And he was determined that my parents should not go, because my father applied for various papers and so on, but they delayed and delayed and delayed.
And did this Gauleiter know your father, or just wanted to stop him going because he was Jewish?
Well, I mean, they lived opposite us.
So he knew him as a neighbour?
Yeah, but we had no relations as neighbours.
Right.
You know, they're very anti-Semitic.
Yes.
And, that was part of the trouble. If he hadn't lived there, my parents would have got out. But he saw to it that they didn't get their papers.
Terrible.
So they went to a ghetto at first, and my father died there. And what happened to my mother, we never knew quite.
But there was quite a long interval between your leaving.
Yes.
And your parents continued in the house, but not in the full house.
I mean, the house, we had the big part of the house, but I don't know if they sold it or whether, you know, that was taken over, but they moved into the attic.
You were able to write to them for a little, I suppose, from Britain?
Oh, yes, yes. They were Red Cross letters.
You went out of Germany when?
On the Kinder transport train.
Yeah, but at what date?
May 39.
May 39.
And
your parents were not deported from Düsseldorf until two years later. They survived in Düsseldorf for 2 years?
What?
Your parents.
What about?
Did they not stay on in Düsseldorf? They could not get out.
No.
They were not allowed visas and papers, though they made every effort and several times got nearly there. Sorry.
Yeah, but the chap opposite, the
yes,
Gauleiter...
But they finally were deported in 1942.
Tell us about coming to Britain then. How did you feel about your arrival in a strange country? Did you have any English, or did your sister speak any English?
I knew porridge, and good morning, and thank you, and one or two other little expressions. And but the point was that it was quite exciting because we came to my aunt and uncle and cousins who lived in Hampstead. So we stayed with them to begin with, which was nice and not too traumatic. But then the war came and we were evacuated.
So was that everybody evacuated? The whole family?
No.
Just the...
The children.
Just the children.
And were there other children belonging to your aunt and uncle, or just you and Lottie?
No, they were grown up.
Right. And where were you evacuated to?
Rickmansworth, in Hertfordshire.
And by that time, was your English much better?
Oh, yes. I had a strong accent, but yes, it was fine.
Some of the teachers took great pain.
Oh, yes. I had one teacher, the geography teacher, who was awfully good. I mean, my books came back covered in red, but everything was corrected and I had to, you know, deal with that. And he helped me a lot, yes.
And did people understand that you were a political refugee, or it was during the war, so was there a problem because you were German?
Where?
In England. Did you
no.
meet any problems? No.
No, there was no, in England, there was no anti...
So when you were evacuated, did you all stay in a big school together? Or did you stay with people?
No, we were, my whole class.
Right.
We were loaded into a lorry and...
You went by train and then lorry.
Pardon?
You went by train and then from the station. Is that right?
No, into a lorry, and then the lorry stopped in the street, and people came to select. They had to take evacuees, you see,
right.
And selected the evacuees, and quite a lot of people wanted my sister, who was a very neat little thing, but my father had said, "You must not allow yourselves to be separated." So I always said, no, we are together.
You get one and you take the other two.
So did you eventually persuade somebody to take the set?
No, eventually we were still left, and a nice young girl said, the woman couldn't come, but she asked me to find her some evacuees. And so she really wanted one, but I said, well... But so she took both of us, and then she was all right. But then we were delivered to our so-called foster parents, and they thought we were... he examined us as though we were Germans in disguise, you know, and
you were German, I suppose.
So we were kind of, and they were horrible, very horrible.
Because you were German?
Yes, and they really only wanted one, but the girl had brought us both. So it was a single bed. And it was impossible to both lie on the same side. So one slept top and one bottom. But we had to change quickly in the mornings before they came in because they didn't allow that. And then when the air raid came, they used to take Lottie, who was still, you know, younger, into bed with them, and I had to stand against the wall during the air raid.
Nice. How much younger was she than you?
3.5 years.
So you must have felt a bit angry about that, I would imagine.
Oh, I was furious, yes, but I mean, what could I do?
Didn't she command you to pray?
Oh, yes.
was that the way to protect yourself
then? Presumably.
But did they know you were Jewish as well as German?
I can't remember. Yes, well, I don't know. Can't remember that suddenly.
You certainly didn't.
It didn't matter, did it? No.
I think they fed you sausages and.
Oh God, yes, the dripping toast we used to get in the morning. Fried toast.
Oh right.
You'd never seen anything like that, I suppose, in Germany.
And some funny sausages which I hated, and I used to put them in my. We wore knickers with elastic, and I used to put them in there and get rid of it.
So how long did you live there? Do you remember? How long were you there for?
Well, we didn't stay with that family long, because I went to the headmistress and said and complained. You know,
good for you.
She was very good. She was a very good headmistress.
You also took Lottie to the doctor, I think.
Oh, yes, that's right. She had a terrible cough, and this woman sent her to school. You know, she wouldn't let her stay in bed or anything. So I got into trouble for it, but I took her to the... I skipped school and instead took her to the doctor, who was amazed to see two little girls come to see him, you know. But he was very good, and he said that she has to stay in bed. So the woman was very cross with me for having taken her to the doctor, but she had to do that. Oh, yes, and all this sort of tension, excitement, I started wetting my pants. Then I used to lock myself in the bathroom and wash them. And there were these awful pants in those days, so woolly, hard to dry. And she used to bang on the door, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" So I was planning some underground escape or something.
And did you get away quite soon from this family? What happened? Were you sent back to London?
We told the headmistress, I told the headmistress, and then an awfully nice lady came to see us and saw to it that we were moved. And then we came to the doctor's family, the Salmons, who became really second home. They had a big garden, a big house, and you know, and the daughter was grown up, and the mother said, "Now you can, this is..." Oh yes, she'd had to escape from Spain or something, where she had her fiancé, and she was at loose ends. So the mother said, "Now they're in your care, you look after them." So she did, and we had a very, very nice time there. I mean, they were very good, and there was a maid who, I think, resented having the extra work.
Mm. Were you then sent back to your aunt and uncle in London during the war, or did you spend the whole of the war as an evacuee?
Yes, as an evacuee.
Right, right.
In the meantime, my uncle died. And we never went there to live again.
And then after the war, what happened after the war? Did you go on to university? Did you get a job?
You had to do war work during the war.
Yes, I did war work. Now, what was this? Yes, because of my ability to speak German and so on, the Minister of Economic Warfare, I had to do translations and plan routes for our troops to in Germany, where to go and so on. So that was...
It's a very responsible job.
It was, yeah.
A young girl.
And were you still at school at this time, or had you left school?
Had left school.
When you were 18 and liable for national service.
Yes, towards
national service at 18.
Yeah, that would have been very responsible indeed. And then what happened after the war ended?
You could have gone to Germany with the control. What? You could have gone to Germany with the control commission.
I didn't.
But you chose not to.
Yes, I could have gone to Germany with the control commission, but I didn't. I wanted to go to university, and so I took a crash course in Latin, which were needed in those days, and other courses, and applied and got into Bedford College in Regent's Park. Yeah.
To study what?
English literature, and English and literature in particular.
And
I had to do Anglo-Saxon, of course.
How could you afford to go to university?
Did you get
a grant, didn't I? Oh, yes, because I'd worked for the, you know, war work, Minister of Economic Warfare, so I got a grant.
That was very good.
Were you still living at that, was with Lottie at that time?
Yes.
And were you aware by the end of the war that your parents had perished?
Well, in 1942 we heard that my father had died. A Red Cross letter, yes. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know quite what happened to my mother, ever, did we?
No. They were deported.
We think she was taken to Old Lodge. That's right. Yeah.
Right. So going back to your studies after you got your degree, did you?
Yes.
Going to teaching, or what did you do with it?
I did have to do some teaching, yes. I went into teaching, but I didn't really want to stay in teaching. So I took courses in shorthand and typing and applied for a job in a paper, on a paper. This was a sort of a weekly paper, I think. But then afterwards I switched to a very good daily paper and wrote reports and that sort of thing. But I had my own, what was it
called? Column? Your own column? Or?
I wrote a diary. I pretended to be somebody or other and wrote a regular diary.
Oh, that's great. For which newspaper?
The Eastern Daily Press.
Very good.
In Norwich.
Excellent.
And when did you meet your partner? When did you meet your husband?
I was married before. What happened? But not for long. It was the year of the flu, when everybody died, and he died. That's right, and that's when I went into journalism, and I didn't meet my husband till. Wait a minute, we got married in 19.
So you were going to tell us when you met your partner, your current partner, Peter, and where?
So you think you met in 1954?
Well, this is a story that you're often telling the world. You can, I'll leave you to tell it. I mean,
oh, no,
it's a very an exciting story. Do you not recall? Oh, well.
You tell us.
Well, I remember seeing him when I used to, with my boss, go for walks. I used to see a handsome young chap sitting under a tree reading.
And that was Peter.
I'd come down from Peter. University and was at a loose end. I was working as a forestry labourer, in fact, and in my hometown. And I was applying for jobs and I needed someone to type my curriculum vitae because I had no typewriter. It looked better if it was typed. And I asked a friend to do this because I knew he ran a typing school. And he said, yes, and on one condition, you can come and help the church fete. And I went to help the church fete and she was the reporter that came.
I was a reporter then, and that's right, that's how
you met. And did you come to Scotland soon after that, or did you spend most of your married life in England?
No, we came to Scotland when my daughter was 8, and she's now 50-something.
So we're talking about...
She's now about 55.
So in the 1960s... You came to Scotland.
Yeah, I think.
What brought you to Scotland and to this beautiful house overlooking the Tay?
Anyway, I got a job here.
As a reporter here?
I was teaching to begin with. Mm. And then, yes.
And so you have a daughter?
Yes.
And
just one daughter.
Lovely. And does she live in Scotland?
No, she lives in Bristol, and she's, you may have seen some of her programme, wildlife programmes on television.
Ah, right.
She's a producer, is she, of these programmes?
Well, she has produced some of these, but she's now freelancing. Yes, she had a regular... of wildlife things on. Peter will remember better than I. She still does some wildlife work, but she lives in Bristol.
Can I ask you, when you came here, did people know about your background? Did they know about your German background and your Jewish background and what brought you to Britain in the first place?
Which people?
The people you met here in Dundee, the local people who became your friends and neighbours.
Well, some did, I suppose, and others, yes. I mean, I didn't keep anything... Well, in any case, I wrote my book and... It's all in there, so, you know.
I was interested in that. What made you decide to write a book?
Well, I had written all about the 9th of November, you know. And a friend said, well, you know, you ought to write a book. And Peter sort of saw to it that I did... I'd got quite a lot of notes anyway. I kept a diary.
We were just wondering, Peter, what made you come to Scotland? Was it for work?
A job, yes. That brought us here, yes.
If you look back now on your time first in England and for the last 40 years in Scotland, what would you say are the high points that stand out for you?
Well, having Petra. And... our excursions into the Pyrenees and that sort of thing. We did a lot of walking in the hills.
Well, walking was always our recreation.
Exploring and staying in youth hostels and, you know, The days when we went climbing and all that sort of thing.
With a tent or without a tent, sometimes.
Sounds very, very brave. Tell me, do you feel yourself still as German or British or Scottish? What do you consider yourself to be now?
British.
British. And any low points? So obviously, your experiences in Germany, but anything else that you think stands out in your life?
Well, I was married before, and when he died from the flu, you know, that
best friend, and who had spent the night with them before, who had sat with them the night before their deportation. And anyway, that's how she came by these things. And then we went back to Germany and
other things like jewellery and other.
That's right, you said that some had been taken by a friend.
And they'd managed to preserve them, and photographs too.
Yes, I've got photographs, yes.
Well, but you had to sort of cling to your memories.
I was just going to ask one final question. Have you always been involved with Association of Jewish Refugees, or how did you get in touch with
Kindertransport Reunion?
Ah. Oh yes, that's right. The Kindertransport Reunion, that's quite a long time ago, yes. That's how I made contact with.
Ah, right.
And, you know, I've been to quite a lot of the reunions and things, doing things together kind of thing. But, of course, living up here now, I'm out of touch with.
Well, thank you very much for speaking to us. That was a most interesting afternoon.
Well,
thank you. I just would like to ask a couple more questions, Hannah, because Peter said that you went back to Düsseldorf and you went back to visit the primary school.
Yes.
And now you have these beautiful calendars. So why do the children send you calendars every year from your primary school? Is that because they've changed, and you said something about changing the name of the school? So did you give public readings of your book in Düsseldorf?
Yes, yes.
Oh my goodness, right. And did you read in English or did you read it in German?
In German.
Oh right, so...
In Düsseldorf.
Because you have a German version of the book.
I'm right,
as well,
saying
as
that
as
it's been fully translated.
Yes, yes. That was translated by the daughter of my father's friend, the writer, Rutger.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened when the head teacher heard you at one of the readings?
The head teacher?
So did she invite you back to your old school?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Oh, yes, there was quite a sort of... they made quite a bit of fuss, yes.
That is lovely. That is lovely. And what's the name of the school?
I think it's just got the name of the place, Gerresheimer.
Right, but has the school not changed its name as well?
You mean the Hannah Schoendorfer School?
Yes.
So
that's your name. Did they change the name to...
Yes, they called, yes.
To remember that you were a pupil there. That's marvellous.
So that's absolutely wonderful. So you have a school named after you?
Yes.
How fantastic. And so... they send you a calendar every year?
Yes.
How lovely.
And if ever I'm anywhere near, I go and visit them, yes.
I don't think I have ever met anybody who has a school named after them. I think that's quite fantastic.
It is, yes. Well, I'm very pleased about that because, not because of me, but my father who did, you know, who wrote... for the German Düsseldorfer papers and series, and he was quite a well-known figure there. at the time. So I'm glad that his name is remembered.
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely, it's recognised.
Mm, mm.
Quite, and it's also, it's passing your story down for future generations as well.
Yes, yes.
And did you say also that your book is used in schools as well?
Yes.
So I think it's commendable that you've written it, and it shows how important it is as well.
Yes.